Brian, as this Jontay Porter NBA situation started developing, what was your reaction to it all?
I couldn't believe two things. One, how brazen it appeared that Jontay had been. And the second thing was that you could even bet Jontay Porter props.
Now to a developing story in the NBA. Raptors forward Jontay Porter is under investigation by the league following multiple instances of betting irregularities. The NBA is looking into some prop bets involving Porter from games on January 26th and March 20th.
These are prop bets on a role player who doesn't play significant minutes on his statistics. It's a little bit of a different thing. And again,
I had no idea that you could bet on players like that. And also a sub text to that was really the nature of the way the sports books were operating, which was that they would be willing to take these types of wagers that could potentially be manipulated so easily.
The NBA has leveled a lifetime ban on the Toronto Raptors, Jontay Porter, for his involvement in gambling. The league's investigation found everything from limiting his own participation in games, sharing confidential information with known bettors.
When it comes down to Jontay being banned for life, 0.0% surprised. I guess my only reaction is that it happened faster than I thought it would, because investigations by nature seem to take triply long, as you'd think they should. Jontay violated at least three absolute red line no-nos. He specifically altered his performance in an apparent attempt to help win bets. He shared inside information about his availability and who knows what else with gamblers. And he, according to the league, wagered on the NBA games, including his franchise, albeit he was in the G League at the time. Any of those three probably are player death penalty violations. He was doing all three. And the concerning thing, Clinton, is that there may be even more that isn't public yet or hasn't even been discovered yet.
All week, the NBA has been making its way through play-in games in preparation for the start of the playoffs this weekend. But in the middle of it all came the news of a history-making ban over betting irregularities. So today, our NBA Oracle Brian Windhorst is here doing double duty as we sort through the fallout and size up the storylines to watch in round one of the playoffs. I'm Clinton Yates. It's Friday, April 19th. This is ESPN Daily. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. Brian Windhorst, our original plan today was, of course, to preview the NBA playoffs, but there was a news development on Wednesday that, as far as I'm concerned, was flat out more interesting than anything about 1-8 or the play-in. The league announced they were banning Raptors G League two-way player reserve center Jontay Porter. It was kind of weird because a lot of people basically have no idea who he is. Can you explain to folks, A, what kind of a background he has as a player, and B, what the lead-up to all of this was?
Well, I think the most important thing for the casual fan is that he's Michael Porter Jr.'s brother, one of the stars of the champion Denver Nuggets. And like his brother, Michael, he came into college at the University of Missouri very highly regarded as an NBA prospect. And like his brother, he had terrible injury problems. And so his college career, whatever it was going to be, was completely derailed by these injuries. And the fact that he was able to play in the NBA at all is remarkable. He did get a cup of coffee in the NBA a couple of years ago, didn't catch on with any teams, and spent the last 2 years out of the league. And through playing in other leagues and in summer league, was able to re-earn a spot on an NBA roster, albeit as a two-way player that spends most of his time in the G League with Toronto. So it was actually a great opportunity for Jontay Porter to display himself in NBA games, and instead to use those opportunities to, you know, throw his own personal performance. Frankly, it's shocking, it's insulting, and it's a little bit tragic when you look at the whole thing with some perspective.
He had a couple of nice games in the winter. Fast forward to the spring, a March 20th game against the Kings is where things seem to have gone awry.
Yeah, so he had been playing well over 20 minutes. He was scoring some points, had a couple of double-digit scoring games, had a couple of games where he had, you know, there's one game where he had 10.6 rebounds and six assists. He was starting to, you know, figure out a role. They were playing this game against the Kings, and about 2.5 minutes into it, he told the coaches that he wasn't feeling well and went to the locker room and did not return. The team announced he was out for the game with flu-like symptoms. And in and of itself, you wouldn't really think much of this. But two things had kind of happened with sportsbooks. One, after he'd played over 20 minutes in four consecutive games and put up some numbers, the sportsbooks put out some lines expecting him to play over 20 minutes and put up some numbers. The second thing that happened was that there was an incredible amount of betting done on him, wagering on the unders of those lines, including at DraftKings, an $80,000 parlay bet, meaning a bet that has a number of different sub bets within it where the bettor gets improved odds if he wins all the bets. And this particular parlay had multiple Jontay Porter unders bets within it and was cast at $80,000 to win over $1.1 million. And when that bet came home as a victorious wager, largely based on hitting multiple unders on Jontay Porter, DraftKings flagged it. And within 48 hours, the NBA had started an investigation, and Jontay Porter had played his last moments in the NBA.
Well, the most quizzical part about it, to me at least, is that he made over $2 million over the course of his four whatever years in the NBA, and he made about $20,000 on these bets. I mean, the cost-benefit of this seems questionable at best. Based on what you're hearing about this investigation, I mean, was this level of punishment expected, or is this something they discovered throughout the course of understanding what was actually happening in terms of the depths of the gambling?
Yes, without question, it was shocking. But number one, we have a potential $1 million windfall here that was caught. It's possible that there were other windfalls that aren't yet known about. As a two-way player, he was earning even less than the standard NBA minimum salary. He was in the range of earning about $400,000. That is obviously a very good salary relative to the average American, but by NBA standards, it was, you know, basically less than minimum wage. So I think that that's relevant to understand. And I don't know him personally, so I'm just speculating. But I've read things that he has said. I know that he was highly involved in the cryptocurrency space during the pandemic when basketball was shut down. You know, I think he is probably considers himself to be sort of a sharp investor. So it's also possible he was, you know, trying to make hay while the sun shines, so to speak.
You know, scandals like this can really affect the public perception of the league. We've seen what's happened with Major League Baseball and Shohei Ohtani and all the fallout from that. And considering that the playoffs are just about to start, if you're Adam Silver, NBA commissioner, is there any particular reason why you announced this now as opposed to waiting until later, considering nobody really has ever heard of Jontay Porter before and probably won't since?
I think they also just maybe wanted to get it done when they had enough investigation. The thing about it is that I'm not sure you're ever going to have a 100% clean league when it comes to gambling, especially with how easy it is to wager in the United States now. And I think the sports leagues are making a calculated investment here, which is that they know that there's potentially going to be some scandals. The goal is to use enforcement and oversight to reduce the scandals. And overall, the balance of the positives that come along with gambling, which is bringing more eyeballs and investment into the game versus the potential blowback for scandals, is way more in favor of the positive. Now, whether or not this brings faith in this or brings skepticism, I think will vary. But Clinton, a couple of years ago, before gambling was even legal in most of the United States, sports gambling, I spent some time in London at Sport Radar's integrity unit. And Sport Radar is a sports data tracking company. There's a number of them that do this. And one of the things that they do for leagues, including the NBA, is watch all legal wagering across the world and watch for abnormalities. And I was sitting there with the analysts who were watching sports bets come in on NBA games all across the world. And trust me, as soon as they see something that maybe sets off a red flag, they are aware of it within seconds. And Sport Radar's integrity unit has a bunch of pelts on the wall, if you will, of scandals that they were able to uncover. At one point, sort of their greatest achievement was they sniffed out a match fixing in a World Cup soccer qualifying match in Africa a few years ago. And once they flagged it, it led to an investigation where the match was actually ended up being replayed because it was determined that their referee had been paid off.
If you want a super deep dive on that topic, check out a book, listeners, called The Fix by an author named Declan Hill. It gets all into this and how it affects the international soccer world. That's another story. But here's the last thing I want to ask you about this, Wendy. Are we sure this is the kind of fire we want to play with? Is it possible that maybe some of these prop bets are not the road that the NBA needs to be going down as far as maintaining your integrity for the future? Because if they're not going to be embarrassed by it, well, then how do you make sure that this isn't something that happens, for lack of a better term, every other month in the league?
I do think looking at prop bets is probably an area of weakness. I think there's two areas of weakness that I can identify as a casual reporter on stories like this, as someone who spent some time with gambling entities and talking to the leagues and the oversight operations. And certainly this is not comprehensive, but there's two things I think that where there's a potential weakness. One is those prop bets, because those are individual situations where individual players or even somebody, not even a player, even potentially a coach, could affect the outcome of a bet. It's a little bit more manipulatable. So the prop betting, I think, is something that has to be watched very closely. The second thing is player availability. The availability of star players is huge when it comes to the outcome of a game. And sometimes star player availability is kept under wraps until very close to tip-off. But the decision has already been made long before that, because teams act, you know, with paranoia and try to cover up just the exact health of their stars in an attempt to shield it from the opposing team. But the team itself and dozens and potentially even a few hundred people may know that a player is not going to play well before it's made public. The league has tightened its injury reporting standards over the last couple of years, but there's still a large, in my view, hole in that. Players with access to that information and potentially leaking that to gamblers, and maybe not even players, but just staff members who have the same thing. And that's why one of the things that the NBA flagged here was a player giving inside information to gamblers, which is what Porter is accused of. But there's just one more thing I want to say when it comes to integrity, because it isn't just about the player. You know, you look at the Toronto Raptors as an organization. I believe they won something like 3 of their last 25 games. They were actively not trying to win. How do you square that with integrity? I don't think it's sinister. What the Raptors did was strategically sound. But from an integrity point of view, it's not sound. And so you got to be very careful as a league and as an observer of the league to say this over here has no integrity, but that over there is just strategy. So there's a lot of gray area here when it comes to how you're going to handle this. I think it's a complex issue that we're all still working through and learning and trial and erroring, but gambling is not going anywhere, and neither is the NBA or other sports leagues' participation in it.
Coming up, we will actively talk about actual basketball. Delicious, meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Okay, Brian, we can turn back to on-court matters. We'll find out tonight who's going to earn the 8th and final playoff seed in both of the conferences. But when you look at the entire landscape of this year's playoff matchups, what's front of mind for you? What's the big question or storyline that you see in either conference?
Well, the parity in the league is tremendous right now. And so other than whoever the Celtics end up playing in the first round and the Lakers versus Nuggets series, I honestly look at the other 6 playoff series that are going to happen in the NBA over the next 2.5 weeks. And I don't think it's really possible to call any of them an upset if one team wins. I think, especially in the Western Conference, the level of talent and ability and, you know, upside between number 2 and number 10 in the West, and I know number 10, the Golden State Warriors, have already been eliminated, but the relative difference between those teams is negligible. So I honestly don't think you can call an upset an upset. You know, if you look at the Eastern Conference, the 76ers ended up as the 7 seed. They will play New York as the 2 seed. They are not a 7 seed. When Joel Embiid played this season, he played in 40 games. They were 32-8. That is not a 7 seed. They are artificially deflated as a 7 seed. Some of this is due to just general parity in the league. I think the league up and down is stuffed with talent right now. I think teams in general have gotten quote unquote smarter. There's very few teams right now that are at a strategic disadvantage with how they use lineups, how they sign contracts, how they recruit players. There's there's not much space in between teams that are quote unquote smart and maybe not smart. And it has led to tremendous parity. It is actually as close to the NFL in terms of parity as really in the modern era. And I think you'll see that play out over this postseason.
Speaking of the Celtics, our boy Tim Bontemps, Good Time, says that it's, at least he said on this program, that it's championship or bust for them. But I'll go stay out here in the West in LA where I live, because if these are the only stories that we could really sort of hone in on, let's do it. The Lakers have lost 8 games in a row to the Nuggets. They got swept by them in what many people tout out here as the most competitive playoff series in NBA history last year on their way to the finals for the Nuggets, that is. Are LeBron and company in any better shape to compete with Denver this year, or how do you see that looking as far as the matchup is concerned?
Well, point of order, I think the most competitive sweep.
That's what I meant to say. Saying that in jest, because yeah. Lakers fans are so up their own whatever that the most competitive sweep in NBA history is some sort of thing to them, but you still lost all four games.
I frankly agree that it was a very competitive series, that it being 4-0 was not indicative of how close it was, but at the end of the day, it does not matter. They lost it. And the Denver Nuggets are a just terrific team because of Nikola Jokic. Jokic is on the verge of becoming one of the top 10 all-time players in the league. And you think that's a flippant statement. It is not. If he duplicates what he did last season, where he leads the Nuggets to a championship and wins the finals MVP, and along the way, I believe he will pick up his third MVP, regular season MVP. Clinton, if you look at the list of players who have three MVPs, two titles, and two finals MVPs, we're talking about like 6 or 7 guys. We're talking about the elite of the elite. We're talking LeBron. We're talking Jordan. We're talking, you know, Russell, who they didn't have the finals MVP back then, but I'm giving it to him. You know, this is the, you know, Kareem. This is, Jokic is right there. It's within his sight. And so that's what you're dealing with. If you can't beat the Nuggets, it's not a character flaw. It's that you're dealing with a team that has been together for years. They have put their 20,000 hours in. They are completely honed. Their coach is one of the longest tenured coaches in the league. They have a whole history of what to do under extreme pressure situations in the playoffs. They're a great clutch team. Jokic is one of the most skilled big men we've ever seen, if not the most skilled, at the absolute peak of his powers. When they're going to have home court advantage in a place where there is a true home court advantage that is in the altitude, they're a beast of a team. And losing to them is not an insult. My belief is, unless there's some injury, that the Nuggets will handle it. And that does not make the Lakers some sort of failure.
Let's move over to the East, where Giannis Antetokounmpo's status for the Bucks is up in the air. He's apparently going to miss the first game of their first round series against the Pacers. We don't know if that's going to turn into more. If he's out, what happens with Milwaukee? And do we think the Pacers have a real shot to overtake them?
It's our biggest question mark in the league. I think Milwaukee, what happens with the Bucks and the fallout about what happens with it, it will probably be one of the biggest storylines of the next 3 months. Not just with what happens in the actual playoff games themselves, but what happens in the summer as a result of it. And there's a couple of worrisome things about the Bucks, just health-wise. One, you know, Adrian Wojnarowski reported on Tuesday, I think, that might even have been Monday. No, I think it was Tuesday that Giannis wasn't going to play on Sunday. When it's that many days away and you already rule out a star player for a playoff game, you know, normally in a situation like this, you're going up to the buzzer. You're doing everything you can. They were convinced days in advance he wasn't going to be ready. So that is very worrisome. The second thing is Dame Lillard is not right either. He was being bothered by an adductor injury. And whenever you get Dame dealing with, you know, core muscle injuries, you start to get concerned. He has had issues with those muscles in the past. And so he missed practice earlier this week. He is back at practice now, but what you need if you're the Bucks is you need Dame to be spectacular in these games without Giannis, whether it's game or games, because the one thing about the Pacers that they do great is score. And the Bucks are under immense pressure after the coaching change and the Lillard trade. They are under immense pressure to get this done. Having said all that, They're still a very, very talented team. They've got a lot going for them. They have championship experience on this roster. They can absolutely put things together if they're healthy. But there's a lot on the line, and there's a lot on the line, and they're not dealing with a full deck. And that's a worrisome situation.
Last season, after a disappointing first-round exit, the Bucks had to grapple with that whole failure label. Giannis's comments on that garnered a lot of attention.
Michael Jordan played 15 years, won 6 championships. The other 9 years was a failure? That's what you're telling me? It's a wrong question. There's no failure in sports. You know, there's good days, bad days. Some days you are able to be successful, some days you're not. And that's what sports about.
And then, Brian, earlier this week, you, of course, reignited your amateur mime career, getting a lot of attention for your gesticulations on your comments about the Warriors.
Okay, still a good player. It's okay that the Warriors don't win the title every single year. I know that we expect that you know, you're deemed like you stink. If you don't win a title every year, you stink. They've only won 4, guys. Oh, they've only won 4.
Can you talk to me about this general concept for some of these NBA franchises? The Lakers are included in this as well. But when you've got teams like the Clippers and the Mavs who are in the mix, this idea that failure is not winning a championship. How do you feel about that in the modern NBA these days?
There are 30 teams and all 30 of them are different situations. And, you know, I think that part of my job as somebody who is completely immersed 365 days for over 20 years in the NBA is to provide nuance. And not every situation is straight black or straight white. There are shades of gray. And you can't look at a team like the Warriors losing and say that that's a failure. The Warriors had a very good year. They did not have a great year. And by the standards of where they've been over the last decade, absolutely, it fell short of those of what that standard was. But to look at a team like the Warriors and say that winning 46 games, considering what happened to them, and you know, losing a single elimination road game brands them as a failure. I'm sorry, I just disagree with that. And if you say that this is the end of an era and it's over for the Warriors, number one, I don't agree with that. I think their core players are coming back. Number two, they won 4 championships, went to 6 titles over a decade. I don't think you should ever say that's a failure. I mean, it's really, really hard. And in the case of the Bucks this year, I don't know if they're beating the Boston Celtics in a 7-game series. Maybe there's certain circumstances where they could do it. The Celtics are an awesome team. And so if you say to me, if the Bucks lose this year, will Giannis get traded? Will Dame get traded? Is it a failure? And I say, how did the Bucks lose? Did they lose on a buzzer beater to the Celtics in game 7? Did they lose because Jason Tatum had 47 and Jaylen Brown had 42 and they lost in game 6 where it was very valiant? Did they lose 4-0 in the first round? Did Giannis strain his calf and miss the first 3 games of a playoff series and they lose, you know, 4-2 because they got down 2-1? Like, there's so many different levels and shades to this one. Now, I can certainly say to you, oh, there are certain things that lead me to believe that a certain team is favored. You could play the Nuggets right now, as good as the Nuggets are and as honed as they are, you could play them over and over 5 times in 5 different series and lose all 5 times and still have achieved and done great. And I just don't believe that you look at the team that loses and says that's a character flaw or that's a failure. Obviously, there are certain things at the highest level of professionalism where, you know, you're all grown men and you can't get something done and you say you didn't get this done and you know, you can say you failed at that. And if the 10th team advances all the way to the conference finals and the 2 team is out right away, it doesn't mean that one or the other of them are complete failures and they have to fire their coach, fire their GM, and gut their roster.
Who do you think, in your eyes, faces the greatest stakes right now? We've got a couple of happy-to-be-there teams. We've also got some ahead-of-schedule teams. The Knicks come to mind, the Thunder come to mind, perhaps even the T-Wolves. Who are you looking at as the surprise that could make it out of the first round?
I think the Thunder are in an ultimate free-roll situation. This is a dream. They are the number one seed in the most competitive Western Conference, or if not the most competitive, one of the most competitive of the last 2 decades. And they are completely disrespected. They come into this with no expectations. If they lose in the first round, people be like, well, we told you they were a weak number one seed. You know, like they're sort of the inverse of the failure. They almost can't fail. So it's great to be a member of the Thunder right now. You enjoy it because I think this team is really good. I think they can achieve a lot. I'm not sure I would, you know, favor them to get out of the conference, but you know, in the future, I think that there's going to be a bunch of expectations on them because the world is going to wake up and realize that they are very good and that they should have expectations on them. Other than the Bucks, who just have sort of self-created pressure because of the decisions that they've made organizationally that puts just so much stress on this individual season, I think the Celtics are a team that has the most to prove slash lose. I mean, you know, the Warriors are champions. The Lakers, you know, at least in terms of LeBron and AD, have proven that they're champions. You know, if they go out, it may be disappointing to a lot of their fans, but it's not a referendum on them. The Nuggets are champions. You know, if they lose, it would be an upset in my view, but no one's going to question about whether they're champions. The Bucks, in you know, in when it comes to Giannis and Middleton and that organization, Portis and Brooke Lopez, those guys are champions. They're not, there's not a referendum on whether they can do it or not. There's disappointment if they lose, but you know, they've done it. In the case of Boston, they haven't. And they've lost several series over the last few years that in my view, they should have won. And not just my view, their view too. This is the epitome of a modern team. Everything that they do is what the modern NBA calls for. The sets and the style that they play is cutting edge. They have better depth than people, you know, give them credit for, but certainly in their top six have championship level depth. They are young, but still experienced. I mean, there is nothing that you can say about them. And if they're not able to win again, you know, short of significant injury, it's going to be very hard to explain because they have built this team over the last 5 years into this moment. And the way that the rules in the league are set up, that's going to, that, you know, this new CBA that's really trying to force teams to break up, I think there's a lot of, you know, focus and pressure on them.
I got so many texts yesterday. New Windy reaction pack out. You got to warn people before this happens, man. It takes over my timeline every time. But keep up the good work. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Clinton.
The last two Winner Go Home NBA play-in games are tonight, with Miami hosting Chicago at 7 Eastern, followed by New Orleans hosting Sacramento at 9:30. And all 8 first-round playoff series tip off this weekend. I'm Clinton Yates. This has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by
Bruce Baldwin,
Ashley Brown,
Bradford Craig,
Alexander Hyacin,
Ryan Nantel,
Mike Philbrick,
and Phoebe Unterman.
We had additional help this week from Aaron Vail. Special thanks to Andrew Hahn, Justin Tinsley, Jenna Genevieve, and Jackson Agello. Talk to you Monday, kiddos.